You're listening to the AHTB Cereals and Aussies podcast. Monthly highlights from your arable levy organisation.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the AHTB Cereals and Aussies podcast. I'm Theresa Meadows and I'm the Knowledge Exchange Manager for East Anglia. Since the last episode, the rainfall that we've experienced during May has been welcomed across the country and has made a big difference to those crops that really needed the rain, particularly the spring crops. Generally, the dry weather appears to have had little impact on fields with well-structured soils that had good establishment, and in contrast, those heavy fields with poor soil structure and where P levels have been low have seen crops impacted with a lack of rain. With T2s now on in East Anglia, thoughts are turning to hand roguing where it's required and the start of the show season before harvest. This month we've got news on the new AHDB Nutrient Management Guide that was formerly known as RB209. The US Department of Agriculture's first projections for 2017-18 and a timely reminder about T3 sprays. First up, AHDB's James Holmes was at Grassland and Muck last week with boxes full of the new look RB209. We spoke to him at the show to find out what's changed and why.
So we're here at Grassland and Muck 2017 to launch the new nutrient management guide, more commonly known as RB209. RB209 was produced by many years by DEFRA and MAF before them. They produced a really good guide. It was a really good guide to nutrient management. But over the last 5 to 10 years, there was a lack of investment, and it had led to RB209 becoming slightly out of date and out of touch with modern farming. But having said that, it was still a good guide to nutrient management. And of course, AHDB fund a number of trials on nutrient management, nitrogen response work in cereals and in horticulture and on grass. So it just made perfect sense for AHDB to take on RB209 to improve it based on the research program that it funds. It means that AHDB is able to update that guidance when new information comes to light. It means that farmers and growers have almost immediate access to that as well. We can update RB209. It's a really useful guide to nutrient management, and farmers can use that straight away. The most obvious change is that we're publishing RB209 in 7 sections. So RB209 was in 2010 was published as one rather large guide that included all of the information for all of the different crops. What we've done this time is break it down into sections. So the first section is on the principles of nutrient management. It's the theory, if you like, behind nitrogen supply and loss, for example, the risk of sulfur deficiency. Section 2 is on organic materials and provides book values for the nutrient content of organic materials. Farmers can use that information to better understand the fertiliser value, if you like, of slurry or digestate. The third section is on grass and forage crops. So we've taken those two sections from RB209 and brought them together. It makes a lot of sense. People are growing grass for livestock, often growing forage crops as well. So it made perfect sense to bring those together, and you'll find all of that information in section 3. In section 4 is arable crops, including cereals and oilseeds, but sugar beets, peas and beans as well. The section 5 is on potatoes. Section 6, vegetables and bulbs. And section 7 is fruit, vines and hops. Separating it out into different sections enables us to update each of those sections individually as well, which helps to reduce the cost of doing something like that. But it also makes the information a little bit more accessible as well, because essentially a farmer and an agronomist can cherry pick the sections that they're actually interested in. If they're not growing or advising on fruit or vegetables, then basically you don't need those sections. So it makes it much easier to deal with all around. There are two main types of changes. The first is that we've updated the nitrogen recommendation. So for some crops, we've made small increases to nitrogen recommendations. And then the second type of addition is a yield adjustment for cereals. And for the relevant cereals, what we've said is that if you expect to achieve more or less than the average yield, and that's different for a winter wheat than say a spring barley, but if you expect to achieve more or less, then actually you can think about applying a little bit more or a little bit less nitrogen. You know, you stand a better chance there of applying the economic optimum rate, and you know, we think that's a really important improvement that we've made in the guidance. We've published, you know, what you might call the ninth edition of RB209 now, May 2017, but we have research trials funded by AHDB, you know, it's in the ground at the moment as well, so there's ongoing research that we hope will inform revisions of RB209 in 2019. You can never be entirely sure about these things, you know, that's the nature of research. You're not quite entirely sure what type of seasons we're going to have between now and then, but we hope to be able to make another revision of the arable section of RB209 in 2019. And Cereals and Oilseeds Research and KE Committee have just funded a new piece of research to begin in February next year on spring barley, which will inform a revision of RB209, we hope, in 2021. Over the summer, we'll be at a number of events like cereals, but running Monitor Farm events as well. You'll be able to pick up a copy of RB209 at those events. You can also download a navigable version of RB209, which we think is really useful, from ahdb.org.uk/RB209. And then there will also be an app available as well to download from either the Apple or Google Play stores, and that will include all seven sections. The real benefits to farmers are that by updating recommendations, we can help them make better use of organic materials like digestate. You can better understand the crop's requirement for nutrients. You can make best use of organic materials and then think about how much fertilizer you might buy. So there's potentially some real savings to be made, both in improving the efficiency through producing potentially higher and greater yields, but also making better decisions around the use of fertilizers as well, perhaps reducing or really maximizing the efficiency of the fertilizer that you do buy.
Next, we've got our senior analyst Amandeep Kaurapurewal on the main points in the US Department of Agriculture's first projections for 2017-18.
Hi, my name's Amandeep. I'm a senior analyst for the AHDB Cereals and Oilseeds Market Intelligence team. In today's market update, we'll be focusing on the USDA's first projections for 2017-18. These were published on the 10th of May and suggest that the outlook for next season may be finally balanced. From a total grains perspective, 2017-18 is forecast to be the first deficit year since 2012-13, with overall consumption forecast around 24 million tonnes higher than total production. Looking at the major global grains, total maize production is projected to be around 21 million tonnes lower than demand. So there's a deficit there, and it's a bit larger than the maize deficit we saw in 2015-16. At 195 million tonnes, global closing stocks for maize are forecast 13% lower year on year and the lowest since 2013-14. For comparative purposes though, it's more meaningful to look at the stocks to use ratio rather than just closing stock levels. The maize stocks to use ratio is forecast to fall to 18.5%, which was the same in 2013-14. Moving on to wheat then, production is expected to be higher than demand, but the expected surplus is much lower than we've seen in recent years, at around 2.8 million tonnes compared with an average of around 24 million tonnes in the past 4 years. So there's a risk there that the projected surplus could be eroded very quickly due to a weather event, for example. Basically, there isn't much leeway. Global wheat output is expected to be lower year on year in 2017-18, but if realised, would still be the second highest on record. Demand is expected to be slightly lower, so overall global closing stocks in 2017-18 are expected to be higher. The stocks to use ratio is also expected to climb to 35.1%, which is a record, but this can be a bit misleading. What we need to do is consider Chinese wheat stocks. First of all, there's a healthy amount of scepticism about the reliability of this stock's data, and secondly, if the stocks are physically there, it's unlikely that they will be available for the rest of the market if there was a non-Chinese supply issue. So we can't really rely on Chinese stocks to provide a cushion for the market. So if we subtract China from the global stocks to use ratio outlook, then the message is very different from what the headlines are saying. The global wheat stocks-to-use ratio, excluding China, in 2017-18 is forecast at 21%, and that's the lowest since 2007-08. So if there was a global supply issue in the near term, there might not be as much mobile stock around as the headline figures suggest. Finally, if we turn to oilseeds, global soybean production is expected to decline in 2017-18, but still forecast at the second highest on record after the 2016-17 crop. Global demand is expected to increase by around 4% to a record 344 million tonnes, but a slight surplus is expected. Closing stocks, as well as the stocks-to-use ratio, are projected lower in 2017-18, but are still one of the highest in recent years. The take-home message from these projections and the thing to bear in mind is that even though 2017-18 output is generally forecast lower than consumption, record-level stocks from 16-17 are expected to provide a cushion. However, with stock levels generally expected to deplete next season, the market is much more open to supply shocks going into 2018-19, which could increase volatility. We'll soon be publishing a prospects article which stress tests the 2017-18 USDA projections and examines different scenarios, so keep an eye out for that as well as other news and analysis on the market's website.
June is a traditional month for T3 applications, so now is the time to think carefully about your sprays. T3 shouldn't be your default. You should look for reasons to spray rather than reasons not to spray. And here's Jason Pohl to explain why.
AHDB monitoring has tracked a decline in the efficacy of azoles against septoria since the mid-90s. As azole insensitivity appears to be driven by application number and less so by dose, the use of azoles at T3 targeted at fusarium species on wheat can result in the selection of fungicide-insensitive septoria strains. At the 2016 AHDB Agronomist Conference, Neil Paverley from ADAS warned that the use of 3 or 4 azoles per year would drive efficacy against septoria into the ground. Because of the importance of T1 and T2 sprays, he stated that the T3 timing provided one of the few opportunities to consider missing an azole application. He said if a crop has good resistance to septoria, the T2 doesn't need topping up because it is dry and fusarium infection risk is low, then agronomists need to consider the benefits and risks from a T3. Weekly fusarium infection risk forecasts, published by AHDB during the main flowering period, can be used alongside local knowledge to guide the T3 spray decision and the completion of the mycotoxin risk assessment. Based on field level risks, if a T3 spray is judged to be necessary, then AHDB fungicide activity and performance information can be used to guide product choice. Trials highlight that not all azoles are effective equally against both septoria and fusarium. There are no reports of resistance to azoles in species which cause fusarium head blight. Where azoles are used, however, they should be protected by the addition of a multi-site. Strobilurins have no activity, and SDHIs do not offer strong control, and are therefore best limited to T1 and or T2 timings to protect their efficacy. T4 sprays should be avoided as they add massively to the resistance risk, and as fungicide efficacy against fusarium drops rapidly once infection is established, there is little evidence of them being helpful to yield and quality. For the latest fungicide performance information, in addition to AHDB's mycotoxin risk management tools and publications, visit cereals.ahdb.org.uk/mycotoxins. Fungicide resistance guidelines, which have now been updated by FRAG UK to reflect recent changes in the resistance status of cereal pathogens, can be accessed at cereals.ahdb.org.uk/frag.
Finally, we're launching 6 new monitor farm projects this summer. If you've not been along to one of your local meetings yet, I'd really encourage you to get involved in one of our new or existing projects. They're farmer-led and farmer-driven, covering the topics most relevant to the farmers who attend the meetings and helping them find new ways to strengthen their businesses.
Quite a broad range of subjects, and as always, something of discussions about everything's been good.
The programme helps to keep people, thinking and a bit more up to date for those who attend.
It's strengthened our business a lot.
The programme was quite varied.
The farmer-led part of the programme is really, really valuable.
All of the new monitor farms will have open days this summer, so visit cereals.ahdb.org.uk/monitorfarms to find your closest meeting. In just under 2 weeks, we'll be at Cereals event. We've got a full programme of tours, debates and updates over the 2 days. You can pick up the latest Horizon documents, find out more about FarmBench, AHDB's new whole farm benchmarking tool, get your new nutrient management guide, or join in the Monitor Farm debate. At 11:30 in the morning on both days of the event, monitor farmers from across the country will be gathering to discuss what, if they were given £20, they would spend it on to give the best return for their farm businesses. It'll also feature the hashtag SawMyUndies experiment running at some of the monitor farms this year, so come along to find out more. That's all from us. I'm Theresa Meadows and you've been listening to the AHDB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. Tune in again in a month's time for the next episode. Don't forget to let us know what you think by emailing cereals.admin@ahdb.org.uk. Visit our website cereals.ahdb.org.uk for more information or follow us on Twitter at @ahdbcereals.
Soundtrack files were created by Serilis, Rutger Muller, Barrel Carb, Elton John, Just Kidding, Leah's Son, Valentin Sosnitsky, and Ed TJ via Freesound. Additional music was by Jason Pohl.